and QED, but it doesn't look so different than QED. But you all know that the two theories are qualitatively different once you start to ask about the properties of the vacuum in the quantum field theory. In quantum electrodynamics, the vacuum screens charge. So alpha grows when you probe inside a screening cloud and you go to short distances. In QCD, the vacuum anti-screens charge. So the coupling alpha weakens when you go to short distances, when you probe inside the anti-screening cloud. And this asymptotic freedom, the flip side of asymptotic freedom is infrared slavery. It's the experimental fact that in the world around us, the quarks and gluons of that very simple-looking Lagrangian are bound up in very complicated packages, the hadrons, which are the quasi-particles of QCD. And this is then what makes QCD an interesting challenge to a theorist, even now, 30 years after the discovery. So why should we still be, we theorists, still be interested in studying QCD? Well, it's the only example we know of a strongly coupled gauge theory in the fundamental Lagrangian of nature. There may, in fact, be other such examples. When the LHC turns on and starts to make its discoveries, maybe we'll discover that there's a new strongly coupled sector, factor of 1,000 higher in scale than QCD. But for the moment, we have only one, so we should understand it. And we do understand it at short distances because of asymptotic freedom. But the quasi-particles are very hard to understand. So the actual degrees of freedom, the excitations of the vacuum of this gauge theory, don't look at all like the short-distance degrees of freedom. So how do we respond to this challenge? Well, one path is to study the properties of those quasi-particles. This is a direction with a long history, experimental history, beginning at SLAC and continuing at many accelerator facilities to the present day. The other path is to get away from the vacuum, try and study the phases of the theory in which the quasi-particles may be different and perhaps easier to understand. I should say that there's been contributions to both of these paths from the ADS-CFT direction recently. I'll be talking about the second path. On the program of this conference, there's a parallel talk by Brian Battelle, who will or has already reported recent developments in using ADS-CFT to understand properties of hadrons. So can we change the phase of the theory? Can we study QCD in some in which we're not studying quasi-particles of the vacuum anymore? Can we get away from the vacuum? Beginning in the already in the mid-70s, people realized that an interesting direction was high temperature. As you go to infinite temperature, you take a formal limit of very, very high temperature, you have to reach some new phase of the theory because entropy wins over order in this limit. And so the symmetries of the high temperature phase of QCD have to be the same as that of its Lagrangian. There can be no order parameters. There can be no symmetry breaking. And asymptotic freedom then tells us that, well, as T goes to infinity, we must then have a weakly coupled plasma of quark and gluon quasi-particles. So if you go to high enough temperature, you have to get that weakly coupled gas, which Bill set up as a foil. Furthermore, lattice calculations of QCD thermodynamics show, as Bill already showed, they show a crossover, clear evidence of a crossover from one phase to another. Two things happen. The lower plot is the melting of the vacuum. I won't talk about that. But the upper plot is deconfinement, the change in the number of degrees of freedom as parameterized by energy density over T to the fourth. And you see, as Bill already described, that there's this crossover at a temperature of something like 175 MeV, at which the number of degrees of freedom rises to within about 80% that of the ideal quark gluon plasma. And Bill already described how the combination of these lines of thinking set people up before Rick to be expecting a weakly coupled plasma. I should say that theorists weren't quite as naive as that, because everybody always knew that at, say, a few times TC, QCD couldn't yet be truly weakly coupled. And also, everybody also knew that even if QCD were weakly coupled, there would still be strong long-distance magnetic interactions. But those lattice calculations were seductive. 80% is good enough for government work, as Bill said. And the statement is that the lattice calculations showed that as you went from 2TC to infinite T temperature, no thermodynamic quantity changed by more than about 20%. And so even though people knew that there would be strong interactions in the magnetic sector, blah, 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 everyone had in their mind a quasi-particle picture. So everyone had in, had in their mind that once you got above TC, you would have quark and gluon quasi-particles. And something, the language people used was built upon that notion. Then came the experiments. I'll use this slide as a punctuation mark. So beginning in the early 2000s, we started to learn about this stuff from experiment. I now benefit significantly from having Bill as the previous speaker. I don't need to describe to you what this observable B2 is and how it is that we have learned from the experiments that this quark gluon plasma, expected plasma, is actually behaving more like an ideal liquid than an ideal gas. Experiments at RIC seems to suggest to us that the quark gluon plasma is so tightly coupled at temperatures of around 1.5 TC, which are the temperatures accessible to RIC, that it's better thought of as a liquid than a gas. And liquids have no quasi-particles. It's one of the characteristics of liquids. They're so tightly coupled that there are no degrees of freedom that propagate for long distances, thus have narrow widths. The origin of this insight is the study of little explosions of almond-shaped blobs of quark gluon plasma created in heavy ion collisions, which are not head-on, as Bill described very well. And the point is that if you had incomplete thermalization or large viscosity, you would get. So let me talk about what would happen if you had infinite mean free path. This is the answer to the question that was asked at the end by my chair. If you had infinite mean free path and no thermalization, then this would be like having 100 proton-proton collisions in that red volume. And 100 proton-proton collisions by the central limit theorem would give you a circularly symmetric final state. On the other hand, if you get rapid equilibration or local equilibration, then you should think of this as a little bomb. It's a hot fluid with that shape. It's hottest and highest pressure in the center, so it explodes asymmetrically. And these asymmetric explosions lead to asymmetric final states. You describe the explosions with hydrodynamics, and it works amazingly well. And quantitatively or semi-quantitatively, you turn this into a limit on the ratio of shear viscosity to entropy density, as Bill already described, and you find that it's of order less than some number of order 0.1. 0.2 seems to be ruled out. And you should compare this to two things. First of all, terrestrial fluids, as Bill already described, and second of all, what you expect from perturbative QCD calculations. And by either comparison, you find that the viscosity is very small. The fluid is strongly coupled. It's behaving like a liquid. I will, since Bill didn't show them in great detail, I will show the most recent results from Romachki et al. It's actually a more recent paper than the one Bill showed. If you try and do a viscous hydrodynamic calculations, the caveats are all there, and we're there already in Bill's talk, you do the best job you can, and you compare green is zero viscosity, red is 8 over s of 0.08, which is 1 over 4 pi, by the way, blue is 8 over s of 0.16, and you see that the open data points are actually the corrected data points. There's an experimental issue, which I don't have time to describe, which the STAR collaboration now believes that their B2 should be corrected downwards from the black solid points to the open solid points. And you see that that corrects, that correction, it looks perfect. It looks like you have 1 over 4 pi. But there's another issue, which is how well do we understand the initial conditions? In other words, how do you translate that red almond into a profile of energy density at time 0? And there are uncertainties in that. And if you make a different choice of initial conditions and do the same calculation, you then find that the blue dots, which is 8 over s of 2 over 4 pi, do the best job of fitting the data. So the state of affairs right now when you try and do this extraction is that there are issues on both the experimental and theoretical side that make it difficult to make a statement better than 8 over s less than 0.2. But if we had independent measures of that initial state profile, we could then improve the situation. And that's something which both experimentalists and theorists are thinking about actively. Another direction on learning about 8 over s is, well, can you just calculate it from the lattice? And until recently, the answer was simply no. But recently, Harvey Meyer has done the first lattice calculations of 8 over s and, in fact, the bulk viscosity zeta over s in not yet quite in real-world QCD, but in QCD with gluons only. And he finds results that are quite close to 1 over 4 pi. 1 over 4 pi is this horizontal line here. and at three temperatures, encompassing the temperatures explored by Rick and the LHC, sorry, four temperatures, he finds a result that's within striking distance of 1 over 4 pi also. Furthermore, he sees no signs of temperature dependence in 8 over s, and that would suggest, that makes a prediction for the LHC, that suggests that the core Coulomb plasma at the LHC should be just as good a liquid as at Rick. This is something which the LHC experiments will test with. I should say that the first measurement of V2 at Rick was done with about 20,000 events. So 20,000 events is much less than a day at the LHC. So with the first day of data on heavy ion collisions at the LHC, which will occur sometime in 2009, you'll have the data needed to test whether the quark gluon plasma at the LHC is as good a liquid as at Rick. Then another sidebar. As Bill already mentioned, there's another strongly coupled fluid in town, and it's only fair to mention it. And that is, it's 20 orders of magnitude colder. The temperatures of micro and nano kelvins instead of 10 to the 12th kelvins. What you do is you cool a gas fermionic atoms very cold, and you have a knob which you can dial to make the coupling between those atoms very, very strong. And then you let it explode, and you study its explosions using hydrodynamics, and you find that they're very well described by ideal hydrodynamics, much to the surprise of that community also. And then to get a really good measure of the shear viscosity, they can do a trick that we can't do, which is to watch the expansion of an exploding, rotating cigar. So you give this cigar-shaped cloud a torque just before you let it explode. You watch its explosions, watch its expansion and rotation, and you get an even better result than the one that Bill showed. This is unpublished data from John Thomas showing that for the rotating cloud experiment, he gets an 8 over s, which is bang on 1 over 4 pi, within error bars, which as of this conference talk, he was not yet willing to put on the transparency. You should watch CondMat for that publication soon to come. So nature has given us a strongly coupled fluid and not a weakly coupled plasma. So how do we theorists respond? How can we calculate the properties of a strongly coupled, what did Bill call it, a quantum gauge fluid? Well, lattice QCD is the perfect tool for its thermodynamics. It is, as it always was, the perfect tool for calculating the thermodynamics of the quark gluon plasma. The calculation of transport properties like eta is just beginning in lattice QCD. Lattice QCD is starting to have things to say here, but this is just the beginning. For more dynamical quantities like those associated with jet quenching, because lattice QCD is done in Euclidean space, it's naturally addressing thermodynamic quantities of a static plasma. Jet quenching is out of reach. The other tool that we have used for decades is perturbative QCD. All the pre-existing calculations and most of the current calculations having to do with, for example, jet quenching are built upon perturbative QCD. This is, you know, QCD is the right theory for the quark gluon plasma, but weak coupling is the wrong approximation. And the third path, which I want to focus on in the rest of this talk, is can we calculate quark gluon plasma properties in other theories that are not QCD, but that are analyzable at strong coupling? And the question here is, are there some dynamical properties of these strongly coupled fluids that are universal? In other words, the same for strongly coupled plasmas in a large class of theories. This is a natural question to a kinetic matter physicist, but to particle physicists, it seems odd to be attempting to learn about QCD by doing calculations in a theory that's not QCD. But this is done all the time in kinetic matter physics. And the question is, what properties might be universal, and what class of theories, the plasmas in what class of theories might have universal properties? These are the open questions. So we need, then, the Ising model of quark gluon plasmas. I remember the Ising model as being described as the spherical cow of statistical mechanics. So we need the spherical cow of quark gluon plasmas. So what's the spherical cow of strongly coupled gauge theory plasmas? Well, it turns out that it's the so-called n equals 4 supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory. Now, some of you know what this is. Others of you don't. If you don't know what it is, I'll tell you all you need to know for this talk. It's some gauge theory which is specified by two parameters, the number of colors and the strength of the coupling. The strength of the coupling that is described by g squared times nc, which I will call lambda. This theory is quite unlike QCD in one very important respect. It's conformal, meaning that the coupling does not run. So lambda is just a parameter. So, well, let's pick a large lambda. And let's study this theory at non-zero temperature. Then, by choice, we have a strongly coupled plasma, gauge theory plasma. The reason that this theory turns out to be analyzable at strong coupling is that it's secretly equivalent to a string theory in a particular space-time, which involves ADS. So this is the spherical cow of ADS CFT also. And it turns out that in the NC goes to infinity and coupling goes to infinity limit, the string theory reduces to classical gravity, and we know how to do classical gravity calculations. So the great thing from our point of view of ADS CFT is that in the strong coupling limit, where gauge theory calculations of anything that is not static become impossible, here they become easy. So the purpose of the rest of my talk is to describe some of the insights into the properties of strongly coupled plasmas that have been obtained via calculations done on the spherical cow theory and on the infinite class of other gauge theories that have been shown to be dual to gravity theories in funny spacetimes. Because of the time constraints, I will not describe how these calculations that lead to these insights are done. I will just assert that all of them are easy. They're much, 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 much easier than the corresponding perturbative QCD calculations. They're so easy that I know I can give you experimental evidence of the fact that every calculation that will go into things I talk about can be done by undergraduates once you teach them the rules. So you don't need supercomputers. You just need undergraduates. So I want to describe five insights obtained from this ADS-CFT approach. The first insight comes in the thermodynamic arena. I told you that, and Bill told you also, that the lattice calculations showed an energy density that was about 0.8 of the ideal gas value. And now Gubser, Klebanoff, Pete, and Seitlin came along and noticed that in these strongly coupled theories, you can compare the energy density at infinite coupling to the energy density of the weakly coupled plasmas of their theory. You can, in the spherical cow theory, you can choose whatever lambda you like. You can study lambda equals zero, lambda equals infinity. And thermodynamics doesn't change much when you go from infinite coupling to zero coupling. It only changes by a factor of 3/4. And that's true for the energy density, for the pressure, for the entropy density, for all thermodynamic quantities. So the lesson here is that thermodynamics is a very, very bad way to discern whether the gauge theory plasma you're looking at is a strongly coupled near-perfect fluid or a weakly coupled near-ideal gas. You can't tell. It only makes a change of 25%. And furthermore, you'll see that 80% is closer to 75% than it is to 100%. So now we're very comfortable with the notion that even though the lattice calculations showed thermodynamic quantities 80% of the ideal gas value, we in fact have a very strongly coupled fluid. Lesson number two, again, very well set up by Bill's talk, is the shear viscosity. I was holding back on mentioning 8 over s equals 1 over 4 pi until this moment in my talk. You, of course, have just seen it in Bill's talk. What we've learned from experiment is that 8 over s is small for the quark-gluon plasma, less than of order 0.2. And what we've learned from the ADS-CFT side is it gives us a benchmark to compare to on the low side. We've learned that for any theory with a gravity dual, in the number of colors goes to infinity and strong coupling limit, 8 over s turns out to be 1 over 4 pi. So this is the best example to date of a potentially universal quantity. Examples of theories whose plasmas have an 8 over s of 1 over 4 pi, many examples are now known. Some of these examples are conformal, like the spherical cow theory. Some of them are not. Some of them are confining at zero temperature, unlike the spherical cow theory. Some of them don't confine at zero temperature. Some of them have fundamental degrees of freedom, like quarks. Some of them don't. Some of them are supersymmetric. Some of them are not. Many of them have varying numbers of degrees of freedom. So this is the best studied example of a quantity which has a chance to be universal. And we're hoping that other quantities, which I'll talk about now, will be studied to the same degree in the near future. There's also this possibility that this 1 over 4 pi, which is the result for this very large class of gauge theories, is also a lower bound for all materials. I would actually say that this conjecture is looking a little bit shaky at the moment. There are several reasons for that statement, one of which I'll mention very shortly. Okay, so to summarize at this point, I've given you two insights. And so at this stage in the talk, what we've learned from the ADS-CFT side is that we have an infinite class of different gauge theories whose quark gluon plasmas all are equivalent to string theories in higher dimensional spacetimes containing black holes. They all have thermodynamics that's all thermodynamic quantities, 75% of their ideal gas values. And yet they all also have very, very small shear viscosities, 1 over 4 pi, meaning that they're very, they're more hydrodynamic than water. Water has 8 over S of 10. These all have 8 over S of 0.08. We do not know whether QCD is in this universality class, but there is one piece of evidence from experiment that the 8 over S is in the right ballpark, and there's another piece of experiment from lattice QCD that the thermodynamics is in the right ballpark. So I think it's clear that the question that's been posed by the combination of lattice QCD experiment and ADS-CFT is there a new notion of universality for nearly scale invariant liquids? To what systems does it apply? Seems to apply to these plasmas and other theories that are dual to string theories. Does it apply to the QCD quark gluon plasma also? And does it apply to this unitary fermionic atom gas, this gas of fermionic atoms, studied by John Thomas's experiment? As an aside, the gravity dual for that cold atom system may recently have been discovered. There are two very recent papers, one by Dam Son and the other by Kaushik Balasubramanian and John McGreevy, which propose a gravity dual for such a system. And in still unpublished work, Alan Adams and Balasubramanian and McGreevy, who happen to be down the hall from me, which is how I know about it, they may have calculated the 8 over S for the gravity dual of these cold atom systems, and it turns out to be less than 1 over 4 pi. That's why, that to me is the reason why I said that this bound is looking a little bit shaky, but that is a calculation that's less than a week old and not yet on the archive, so we should wait a couple of weeks and see if it hits the archive. Okay, but a universality is pretty wimpy if it only applies to one quantity, 8 over S. So to what other quantities might it apply? And the suggestions from the heavy ion side all have to do with jet quenching. So to get to insight number 3, if I did not have the benefit of Bill's talk preceding me, I would now have to explain to you what jet quenching is. Bill has already done that for me. So let me just say that jet quenching provides further evidence that the quark gluon plasma is strongly coupled. It's a strongly coupled dense medium. What is jet quenching? Well, it's a phenomenon where you see a 10 to 20 GeV jet coming out in one direction, you look on the other side, and instead of seeing a 10 to 20 GeV jet, you see 10 to 20 GeV worth of extra stuff, but in the form of particles with the scale of the temperature, so a few hundred MeV. So the jet that was going leftward has been quenched and turned into an excess of soft particles. The way this phenomenon is described theoretically, if you was 10 to 20 GeV is probably too low an energy for what I'm going to say to be quantitatively reliable. But if you take the limit in which that jet on the right has infinite energy, then there's a well-established framework for doing the calculations built upon perturbative QCD. And what you learn is that energy loss is dominated by, I don't think that's right. What you learn is that energy loss is dominated by gluon radiation. And in the limit in which the jet energy is much larger than the KT of the radiated gluon, which in turn is much larger than the temperature, then energy loss is dominated by that one parameter Q hat, which Bill already introduced. And the answer to Maxime's question is, you can ask, what would Q hat be if perturbative QCD were the right description? And it turns out to be about 1 GeV squared per Fermi. In perturbative QCD, Q hat counts the number of density of gluons times alpha squared. And it turns out to be around 1 GeV squared per Fermi with the relative when you put in numbers. Really the thing to compare to the ADS-CFT calculation is to ask, does it do a better job than perturbative QCD? I should also note that Bill already described there are experimental issues in the extraction of Q-hat having to do with systematic understanding of really of the geometry of the collision relative to the jet that's observed. These are, I don't know if I should say they're experimental. They're systematic issues, perhaps better described as theoretical issues. But still, it seems that the Q-hat, which is coming out from RIC data, is much larger than what perturbative QCD describes. So what we did was, well, okay, go calculate Q-hat in the spherical cowl theory. And from our result, we learned, first of all, a qualitative lesson. We learned that Q-hat is not proportional to the entropy density, because Q-hat goes like the square root of the number of colors, and the entropy density goes like nc squared. So this tells us that this strongly coupled system we're probing is not described by some quasi-particles or scatterers whose number density goes like nc squared. And this really is the central lesson, qualitative lesson, of the ADS-CFT calculation of Q-hat, that what's being probed here is, if you try and describe it in terms of gluon by gluon, it means that gluon correlations are very, very important. But it's better, I think, to say that it reminds us that there are no quasi-particles in the first place. When you plug in numbers, you get a Q-hat of around 5 in these units, which is in the ballpark of what RIC data wants. It's 5 times larger than what you get from perturbative QCD. But you can't stop there, because that was a spherical cowl calculation. You have to ask, how does Q-hat change when you add some legs and tail and whatever to the spherical cowl to make it more like the real cowl QCD? So this is a theoretical homework exercise, and theorists have been making progress. You can ask how Q-hat changes if you modify the number of degrees of freedom of n equals 4 theory to make it more like QCD. And if you do so while maintaining conformality, we know the answer. It reduces Q-hat by about a factor of 0.6. You can then ask, what about introducing non-conformality? We know less about this, but in one toy model, when you do that, Q-hat is increased by on the order of 20%. So upon taking these two steps in the direction of real-world QCD, we're still in the right ballpark. But this is an exercise which is ongoing, and certainly this is the kind of thing which is much more advanced for 8 over S, which has been calculated in a much larger class of theories than Q-hat so far. Now, I had 3 more lessons to describe. Clearly, that's not going to work. No, I have 2 more lessons. Sorry. Let me see what I can do here. So the fourth lesson, I was going to describe the motion of heavy quarks through the plasma, and there's a very nice advantage to this study over studying jet quenching, which is that you can learn where the energy goes. And in particular, you can study the fact that in a strongly coupled plasma, if you move a heavy quark through it, you will excite a sonic boom, this Mach cone shown here and here, visualized by different observables. I don't have time. I'm going to skip this one. I don't have time to describe it. But that's the really nice lesson from this study, is that a point particle moving through a strongly coupled fluid behaves like a bullet moving through water. It behaves as if it has a size, and it excites a sonic boom, whereas an electron moving through water would not. Fifth lesson comes from the study of screening. If you take 2-point charges in the n equals 4 theory and ask what's the force between them, it turns out to be Coulomb. But then you turn on a non-zero temperature and you find a screened Coulomb potential. This Coulomb potential is very unlike QCD at zero temperature, but the screened Coulomb potential has been seen for decades on the lattice at high temperature. These are lattice calculations of the static potential at finite temperature QCD, and you see Coulomb and then screening. You can then use this to make a prediction for experiment, as Hong, Liu, and Force and I did, by studying the potential between a quark and an antiquark that are moving through the plasma. And this is something which cannot be addressed with current methods in lattice QCD. And what we found is that the dissociation temperature, skipping ahead, the dissociation temperature, well, skipping ahead and drawing an inference from this lattice calculate from this ADS-CFT calculation, we suggest that the dissociation temperature for mesons moving through the plasma should be lower for mesons that are moving than for mesons that are at rest by a simple kinematic factor of square root of gamma. This leads to a prediction for experiments soon to be done at RIC and the LHC, because it suggests that the dissociation temperature for J psi mesons may drop with increasing transverse momentum. It suggests that the J psi yield at high transverse momentum should drop with transverse momentum. This is not seen in the present data. I was going to show you the present data, but I'm out of time. But the present data have large error bars. Data to come will have much smaller error bars, and we will see. I will also just mention that you can get the same result from three other ways also. So this is, again, a theoretical test of the robustness of the result. You can study the limiting velocity for mesons. You can study the growth of meson widths. And you can study the screening of baryons. And they all lead to the same root gamma dependence of dissociation temperatures of bound heavy quark mesons. OK. So I hope I've given you a sense of the fact that we've already gained a number of insights by the study of the spherical cowl theory. On the theoretical side, the clear program is to take steps in theory space from n equals 4 super Yang-Mills theory towards QCD and see how observables change. I should also mention that in addition to the five insights that I hope to describe, there's five more I could have described. And I will end just by listing the five insights that I did describe. So on the thermodynamic side, thermodynamics, when you see thermodynamics within 15 to 25% of an ideal gas, that's consistent with infinite coupling. Lesson number one. Lesson number two, eta over s of 1 over 4 pi in a very large class of gauge theories. And the unitary cold atom gas seems to be close to this valley also, although I mentioned this rumors I'm hearing in the hallways of MIT. Third lesson, Q hat turns out to be proportional to the square root of the entropy density, or the square root of the number of degrees of freedom in this sense, for an infinite class of plasmas. That means that jet quenching does not count gluons, means that you have a strongly coupled fluid yet again. And that quantitatively, Q hat of 3 to 5 GV squared per Fermi is closer to what the data requires than the perturbative QCD result. I should also mention that from this, you can make a prediction for Q hat at the LHC, which turns out to be very simple and will also be very quickly tested. Fourth insight, the one I skipped, point-like quarks drag through the medium, they diffuse through the medium, and they excite Mach cones if they're going fast enough, if they're supersonic. Fifth lesson, heavy quark mesons made of heavy quarks, which are bound above TC, we know that from QCD, will dissociate at lower temperatures when they're moving. And that the only way we've learned that fact has been from these ADS-CFT calculations. This also applies to heavy quark baryons. And I will stop there.
I think we have time for one question.
I think photons are a very nice probe for quark gluon plasma physics, since if you see them, they could come directly from the quark gluon plasma. And is there any way that you could tell from photon signatures about the strongly coupled nature?
So the place where photons, I think, have been used to very good effect so far is something which Bill could have talked about, I could have talked about, neither of us chose to, but I'll try and find. And that is, because, as you said, photons come out without scattering, you can use them as a benchmark, as a control experiment to test that you actually understand what's going on when you talk, say, jet quenching. You can look at the 6 GV pions and compare them to the 6 GV photons, and you see that the 6 GV pions are quenched, as Bill showed already, and then there's very nice Phoenix measurement for the 6 GV photons, and you see that they are unsuppressed. So that says that we understand, when we say jet quenching, we really do understand our control experiment, our benchmark experiment against which we're comparing, because the photons cannot be quenched because they just come flying right out. Now, the challenge of using photons to measure the temperature of the quark gluon plasma, that's an old dream going back to the 1980s. There are now, from Phoenix, very recent data, actually not on photons, but on dileptons, but it's almost the same thing, which suggest that you have seen an excess of, let me just say photons, even though it's not strictly true, you have seen an excess of, the photons are virtual. Let me just say you've seen an excess of photons over what you get from initial hard scattering plus the cocktail of photons you get from the decay of all the hadrons in the final state. So that would be the, that could be the photons of coming directly from the emission from the quark gluon plasma, which is a very nice result experimentally. It's something which has been a 20-year quest. It's pretty hard to interpret as a temperature because you have to say temperature at what time. You know, you can look at the spectrum, but that's the convolved sum of the temperature of the photons from the entire history of the collision. So it's pretty hard to interpret as a temperature, but you could imagine that someday you could say, this says the temperature of the plasma at time one Fermi is thus and so. If you could say that, it would be, it would give you, it would really tighten up everything I said about jet quenching, because all the theoretical predictions for jet quenching have a T cubed in them, and you would then know what T to use. So it could have a very important impact, but we're a little ways away from that. I'm talking about something which Phil knows much more about than I do, so he should jump in if I screwed anything up.
Okay, thank you. I think we would proceed to the next speaker. Thank you.